Good morning. Somehow I got to be the panel person for this conference, but I'm enjoying it. This panel consists of Scott Norris, Braille and Talking Book Library, Lansing, Michigan. Jill Rothstein, Library Director at the Andrew High School, Braille and Talking Book Library, New York. Devin Evans is, Devin, what are you? Patron Services Manager, Carnegie Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, Pittsburgh. And Mark Zeeshan, Recording Studio and Volunteer Services Coordinator, also from Carnegie, Pittsburgh. So welcome to our panelists. These folks have some knowledge on providing training, for the most part, to librarians throughout the area that they work in, having to do with what do you do when you meet someone who's blind and how do you work with them and go forward, which is something that often people who are not familiar with people who are blind, who have not encountered people who are blind in their normal existence, are sometimes uncomfortable about, and we want that to disappear. So with that, each panelist will be talking to you for roughly 10 minutes, and they've been asked to focus on these four questions. Number one, why did you conduct the training that you did? Number two, what challenges did you face? Three, what outcomes did you experience? And four, what resources did you use? And with that, I think that Jill will be our first to speak. Yes.
Hi guys, I'm Jill, so I'm part of the public library system. The reason I decided to offer training to them, the first was that I had been a public librarian for 9 years before joining the Talking Book Library, and I had never had any clue what the Talking Book Library did, and neither did anyone else I ever worked with. So I knew that there was clearly a void to fill in terms of knowledge. But also there had been this kind of de facto understanding going on where somehow all of the public library staff had this idea where, oh, I see a patient with a disability, we definitely should call the blind library. So I ended up fielding all these calls about all different kinds of questions and all different kinds of patron needs that I had no idea about, which was kind of cool for me because I got to learn about all that. But it also pointed out to me how little other people knew and how many opportunities there were in terms of resources and referrals that all public librarians should know about. So obviously I wanted to do that. Okay, in terms of obstacles, well, let me say, so the overview of what we did was that ultimately a colleague and I offered a training to 50 public library staff members, not just librarians, but some catalogers, some people in exhibits, a selection from all over the public library system. And we did not just only did a training about learning how to serve patrons who are visually impaired, but patrons with any kind of disability. It was a very kind of umbrella catch-all training. So the first difficulty was getting management to get this kind of training on the docket. It's a little bit hard sometimes to push your agenda through for management, and we kind of lucked out in the way that we did it is that New York Public Library had what's called an innovation project, where staff across the system got to propose ideas for something they wanted to do, and then all staff voted on it. And a colleague and I proposed doing this disability awareness training for staff, and it got a lot of staff votes, so it showed a lot of staff interest, and then the committee approved it. So we got a small budget, and kind of the sneakily got approval of management to do it through this innovation project. The second challenge we faced was getting people to understand how it affects them. You guys probably know a lot of staff members that you work with, a lot of people in public libraries are overwhelmed by the number of things thrown at them. They have to be, you know, everything to everyone. We've had public library staff members told they have to take food service training and be like the lunch ladies for the summer lunches for kids, all kinds of things. And many of them, for a variety of reasons, say, well, I don't see a lot of people with disabilities, so I don't need to know about that. So the way we tried to do that is just experience. And I'll get a little bit more into the agenda. The other thing was trying to cover everything in one day. Obviously, if we're told you have to cover how to serve people with all kinds of disabilities, you could do a lot with that. And lastly, and this is something that my colleague and I both kind of thought was important in ourselves, it's kind of difficult to get across how important this is and get across a lot of facts and a lot of resources. But it's also really difficult sometimes to address the basic comfort level and get people over this massive anxiety a lot of people have. They really don't want to make a faux pas. They're really scared of using the wrong language, doing something wrong. And that anxiety can kind of pervade a room and prevent people from taking things in. Am I the only one who thinks that? Or is that? No. Okay, thank you. So the way we did that was a few ways. Humor. We actually inserted a lot of humor into our training. Conversations. There's nothing better than a conversation with people who are just able to be honest and answer all questions. Okay, cool. Thanks. Okay, so I have my magic slide done now. So we started off the training. We got 1 day of training. We tried to do two, and they said, no way. So we did 1 day of training, which is actually awesome, because usually trainings are 2 hours. We started off with some of these kind of great quotes and facts about how pervasive disability is. This one says, the disability community is the only minority group that anyone can join at any time. Around 1 in 4 20-year-olds will become disabled at some point before they retire. Disabilities are normal. Having a disability is something most of us can look forward to as part of birth, accident, disease, environmental hazard, or simply the process of aging. I'm going to just skip one because I have too many. And then in between all these quotes, we have some lovely ones from the Blind Onion Twitter account. This one says, blind conspiracy theorists demand UFO manifestations in alternative formats. And I kind of snuck this one in. Sighted men emotionally unprepared for stress of naked blind guy navigating locker room. So some of these, not everyone thinks are appropriate, I understand. It can be offensive. We tried to get across to people, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to say something that someone finds offensive. Language, while they're best practices, is never always accepted. Just be okay, you know, do your best you can. Be polite, be understanding, talk to people, and it's okay. Here's the agenda we came up with. Welcome address. We had a talk by a fabulous group, and I always recommend using local groups, called Diversability. It was a group of 3 people, youngish people, actually, who had different disabilities, who had been trained in this kind of grassroots organization to be spokespeople, in a way, to be comfortable answering any question, who wanted to go out there and wanted to share their experiences and really talk to the community, and that was wonderful. And in our feedback, we heard that that was one of most of our participants' favorite things. Then we had the etiquette, communication, and FAQs talk, and that's where we do all the things like, hey, you know, please don't grab your patrons, you can offer your elbow, things like that. Don't go and pet and snuggle up with a service dog, that kind of stuff. Don't yell at people who are using sign language, because they'll hear better if you're talking loud. Then we had morning tea, which is very civilized. Then we had a section on serving patrons who are deaf and hard of hearing. We decided to separate the rest of it up by category. We had an audiologist come and play sound demos of what words sound like when you're missing certain frequencies of hearing. As much as possible, I think hands-on and experiential learning gets the point across. If you understand that someone who's losing parts of hearing doesn't need you to talk louder, but is actually missing certain letters from a word by hearing what that word sounds like, I think that gets the point across better than just saying, don't talk louder, because it's our instinct. We had lunch. During lunch, we handed out Braille riddle packets, you know, decode the answer to the riddle, and ASL riddle packets, and trivia. Then we had a section on serving patients with developmental disabilities, and that was facilitated by someone from the New York Self-Advocacy Group, so someone who had a developmental disability and who was, again, voluntarily part of an organization that went out to share and answer questions. And then we had a panel of library staff that was already specifically working with patrons with disabilities to talk about targeted programming they do, how they make programming inclusive, different kinds of outreach they do. Then we had a section, what can you do? What did we want the participants to do? And that included, at this point, spreading awareness of NLS resources and other things. Part of that also was to get people in groups, not just taking this all in, but working on printed action plans we had made up to talk about a step that they wanted to choose to take over the next 3 months to improve their accessibility or inclusion at their location. And we did follow up with telephone calls and surveys afterwards to see how that went. And then lastly was training on how they were going to train their staff. At the end of this training, we gave out the New York Public Library Disability Advocates Handbook that we put together from everything that we were going over here. And that included things like a universal design poster and a universal design checklist for libraries and all the internal public library resources, how to get an interpreter. And we trained them on how to condense their one-day training into a 20-minute training that they could then go out and do to their branch staff or their cataloging staff to try to spread what we had told them to everyone. Again, going back to humor, we started by saying, hey guys, this is your homework before the training. It's optional, they're union, we can't say you have to do this, but most people did it. And YouTube is your friend. So on screen now is four screenshots of different YouTubers and TED Talkers. The two videos that we said in the email, please watch these, are Stella J. Young. I think it was called, I remember the second word, inspiration porn. That's what it was called. Otherwise known as I'm Not Your Inspiration. And yes, a Tommy Edison video. I know some people find him to be, someone said the Kim Kardashian of blind YouTubers. But he uses a lot of humor. He answers a lot of questions, and many people find that as a good gateway YouTuber. We might now use Molly Burke, another young blind YouTuber. And another great one is I've Got 99 Problems and Palsy is Just One. And these all use levels of humor and honesty, which I think can be really helpful. On screen now is a photo of our community room with a whole bunch of maybe, I don't know, 15 or 20 people sitting around group tables, which is how we arrange the room for our training and a panel discussion at front. This is a group of four people around a table working together on action planning. And up here is the Principles of Universal Design poster, which has clear examples of, for example, hey, round doorknobs are difficult if you can't grasp, and so you can just have a bar doorknob instead. And lastly, this is our Accessibility and Inclusion Handbook. So resources we used were local groups, people who are willing to talk, lots of hands-on things like a braille caliper, tactile drawing pad, fidgets. We talked a lot about fidgets. And so we gave every table fidgets to play with during the session to get across the idea of fidgets. We had our tech department come and demonstrate a lot of technology for the blind and visually impaired. And what was the outcome? We did follow-up surveys. We got pretty universal people saying this was very valuable and that it should be mandatory for all public library staff. We got around 70% of people saying that they followed through with their action plan. And of course, a lot of people saying it's really hard to do this when my manager hasn't had this training too, when everyone else at the library hasn't made this a priority, and when I have so many other things going on day to day. And lastly, it's not definite yet, but partly I like to hope because of all this. And we got the handbook up on the internal staff site, and we went around to all the network meetings to try to spread it too. And now we are hopefully on the path to making a all-staff mandatory online training about disability awareness. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, very good. If you have questions, please hold those till the end. We just want to be sure that all panelists have opportunity to speak. Scott Norris.
So, since I'm a member of the Blind Rifle Association, there is a company that makes T-shirts that says Blind Rifle Association. So I thought, you know, Jill might want to become a member.
Sure, that sounds great.
Why did we do this? Some of the same similar reasons. To make staff aware. We did one for our department, and there were approximately 300 people that attended. We did it in multiple sessions, and we, as part of the, as the ADA coordinator for the Department of History, Arts, and Libraries, and the head of the Disability Awareness Committee, we came up with a plan to create this program, and management was actually rather receptive to this. So at least at that time, getting the program approved and implemented was rather easy. I've been doing this for a lot of other groups. I just did a program back in April for the docents at the Michigan Historical Center, which is the eastern half of our building. And we had between 20 and 25 docents there. And it turns out that they had not had any disability awareness training in about 15 years. So the new outreach person, Sarah Gross, came and asked me if I'd do something. And then one of the staff members from the Michigan Historical Center, who's also visually impaired, the both of us did a program for the docents. So what do we do? You know, humor is a good thing. I've been doing presenting for, 20 years. And I start out a presentation by saying, if you have a question or a comment, please shout it out. If you have a negative comment, by all means, raise your hand. That cuts down on the negative comments, let me tell you. We used humor. We had a variety of people with disabilities doing presentations. We did a couple videos. We used the book from the Eastern Paralyzed Veterans Association, and everybody got to take one of those away with them. And the nice thing about this was, I think we, for many people, we changed their comfort level about coming up to somebody with a disability and asking a question. Because, if you don't know, you don't know. And the only way you're going to find out is by asking. And I stress to people that, anybody with a disability is just the same as anybody else. You have a good hair day or a bad hair day. And some people are don't want to talk about their disabilities. And, then other people, they're pretty open about, what their situation is. So we did a number of different role plays. And with a smaller group, like the docents that we just worked with, we did some hands-on, like guiding, things like that, how to show somebody who is blind where the chair is. It's over there. That works well. And pointing. So what kind of feedback did we get? We handed a survey out to people, and we got somewhere between 80 and 90% response to that survey, so that was quite good. Usually, if you get 15%, you're doing well. We made that survey rather short, so that that helped the high response rate. And I found more people stopping me in the hall and asking me questions. And that's rather subjective, but a couple of the other people who were that also participated in this department-wide program had people coming up to them and asking them questions. What should I do with this situation? And my relative has this disability, whatever it may be. And so I thought that it opened people up and made them more comfortable with what they had seen and experienced. And I still get people asking questions that are still in our department. So I think that that was very beneficial. Resources, again, we had people with different disabilities, so you could get different viewpoints. We had the book, again, that we passed out. We had also tip sheets that we made up. We had, we offered the training, again, in at multiple times, and then it was the HR folks provided the materials to new hires and encouraged them to meet with us, and we did have some subsequent trainings for small groups. So I think all in all, it it worked well, and it was rather productive. Sue Chenault and I have gone to a couple different libraries and done some training, and Sue especially likes the guide training because we first show them what not to do, and that lets her yank me around, and she can relieve some of her frustrations with me.
I play the bad librarian, and he plays the blind person, of course. And then we ask the audience after we go through a scenario where I break every rule I can think of, what was wrong with this scenario? And that's a lot of fun.
I think the next time we do this, we're going to change roles. But I think, you know, with anybody with a disability, and for anybody in this room that doesn't have one today, you know, just like Jill pointed out, you know, one in four people who are 20 are going to have one. And you know, even just getting older and, you know, your six-year-old son or grandson can, you know, pick that up. Kid dives on the floor, grabs it. You know, you probably can't do that anymore. Or it's more difficult to do that. And so even just the fact that people age, you know, some of your mobility is decreased because maybe we don't bend as well as we used to. Or, you know, our knees don't work as well as they did before. So are you going to experience some of this? Absolutely. You know, and one other point I'd like to leave everybody with, remember that people who are blind cannot hear, so screaming at them is really a good way to communicate.
Okay, so you see humor at points in and out of what's happening up here, and you may laugh or you may not laugh, but we will move on. Devin and Mark, we've got about 18 minutes. Cool. Do you have your PowerPoint? Okay, very good.
Hi, I'm Devin. I'm the Manager of Patron Services at the Carnegie Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. Back in 2015, our staff started conducting staff training sessions throughout the 19-branch Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh system, and that's solely within the city limits of Pittsburgh. In conjunction with that, we did training sessions throughout the Allegheny County Library Association, which is over 50 branches, and we did this as sort of like outreach sessions to inform people of services, to give them the tools to make them more comfortable interacting with people who might have a disability. The first slide is the Carnegie Library System map, and it's got all the little branches. There's 19 within the city limits. And then the next slide is the Allegheny County branches. It's over 50 within the county of Allegheny, and that's our outreach area, Allegheny County. We also participated in the Carnegie Library quarterly onboarding sessions, and those brought together newly hired staff across the city and at all levels. And we would inform them of specialized departments and services. So, of course, the Library for the Blind was a part of that. And we went out to the branches in person for this, for the most part, but we did start doing some remote sessions via Google Hangouts. some of the county branches are kind of far away, so this enables us to have a video chat and show them things like the player. So for resources, we use all of our NLS brochures, things we made in-house, our patron application. We showed off the BARD website and BARD mobile, and we talked about Freedom Scientific software, like JAWS and the Magic Magnification screen. So these are things that are available within the library branches, but unfortunately not everybody knew they were available, so we wanted to make sure they knew the resources they had to provide to patrons who might need them. We also used props like iPads to show off voiceover so people understood that there are accessibility features on their smart devices that they use every day, and a lot of people weren't aware of that as well. Of course, we had the digital talking book machines, cartridges, we brought out our large print books to talk about bigger print, and we had audio described DVD demos that we did so people understood what those were. And we also have a couple Bluetooth refreshable braille displays that we brought out to make people aware, you know, of technologies they might not know of, but that our patrons use every day. And we conducted this training, again, to make people more comfortable and more aware of tools available to help people with, like the National Library Service, and again, the software that was available on their computers, things that people with visual impairments use every day, the iOS voiceover and TalkBack on Android. But at the same time, this gave us a chance to have a conversation about things like the importance of tactile features and wheelchair ramps and universal design and how you should never ever pet a working dog. We also branched outside of the library world, which was really exciting, and we taught LBPH services to other service providers, like teachers and people who work with those who would qualify. So this slide shows a couple of websites. We went to the Western Pennsylvania School for Blind Children to do a staff training there, and we went to the Allegheny Intermediate Unit 3 to teach the teachers who work with the visually impaired throughout the county. And this shows all the staff, or most of the staff that participate in staff training in our branch. You probably remember Brianna from yesterday. She was up here doing a panel. Tony is in the slide at the top. He has the beard. I'm also in that slide, but I'm behind a huge crowd of people, so you can't see me. There's Gabrielle Bucci. She does a lot of our staff training at the branches. She goes out. She also started the Google Hangouts demo, where we're starting to demo that with the outline branches. And then Don Saccone in the bottom left, a lot of you probably know him. He oversees the outreach and coordinates a lot of it for us. This is my favorite slide. So when you make people more aware of your services, people want to share that knowledge because librarians are like that. So in addition to just getting increased invitations to come out and talk or attend community meetings, we saw a huge benefit in the number of registrations. So in the picture there, it shows you 2014. That's before we started doing these trainings. And then in 2015, you can see we had a huge jump in registrations within the city and county area. So even though Pittsburgh, of course, is a part of the county, we don't count that as the county when we're looking at numbers. In 2014, before we began conducting these, we registered in that year 110 new patrons within the city limits and then 92 new patrons just within the county. But in 2015, there was a 92% increase in county registrations. We jumped from 92 to 177. And then in the city, we jumped from 110 registrations to 241. So that first year, of course, we were super excited. We went out and we hit everyone really quick. We are doing this ongoing, so the numbers dropped back a little bit in 2016, but it's still a big increase over 2014. So in 2016, we had a 71% increase still over the original numbers. We were at 157, up from the original 92 for the county, and a 72% increase from the original numbers of 2014. We went from 189 from the original 110. We're expecting to be on par with 2016 for this year as well. Some of the challenges we faced, unfortunately, there are a lot of misconceptions about what we had to offer through the National Library Service. a lot of people only knew about the cassette player. They're like, oh, yeah, you have those big yellow cassette players, right? Well, kind of. But we have other things, too. They didn't know about our streaming services or that we had an app available for people. And they, again, didn't have much knowledge of the technologies available on their library computers to help patrons or on their phones, you know, things that we carry with us every day that could benefit somebody who needs assistance. And a couple online resources. So these we used for training ourselves in-house. You know, you have to know what you're talking about before you go out. So we used the Hadley School for the Blind iFocus video tips on using vision accessibility features in iOS. They're great. They have a whole range of videos. And of course, we used the Library of Congress YouTube channel with the NLS videos for Bard and Bard Mobile. I'm personally a very big fan of the Judy Dixon videos. I talk about those a lot. Okay, I'm going to hand things over to my coworker.
I'm Mark Sachon. I've been the volunteer coordinator at CLP LBPH Pittsburgh for about 8 years, and I did other volunteer work for about total 25 years. So you learn a lot when you're working with volunteers. You learn a lot when you're working with our patrons. I call this presentation Some Things to Consider When Working with Volunteers Who Have Disabilities. And this is really just the nutshell version of all the things we've learned together. But hopefully we can bestow a little bit of the wisdom we've garnered over the years onto you. But I'll start with a joke that I learned from our 87-year-old retired nun, Sister Jeremy. And she told me one day, she said, "Hey, Mark, what's the difference between an unpaid volunteer and a paid professional staff member?" I said, "What?" She goes, "Well, you know, Noah's Ark was built and crewed with unpaid volunteers." She said, "The Titanic was built and crewed with paid professionals." So I was happy to know that. Here we have a picture of Allie, who is one of our monitors and editors, and she has a dog in her lap. But as far as I knew until the day she called the morning of, she didn't really have any disabilities. And she said, "Hey, Mark, I just lost my job, and I'm not sure I'm composed enough to come in and do a monitoring session, but I could probably get through it if I bring my therapy pet." And I went right to our boss, Mark Lee, and I said, "This ain't in our policies and procedures manual." You know, we have a byline for a therapy dog, but we don't, or for a guide dog, but we don't have one for a therapy dog. He said, "Well, it's time to get up to date and tell her to bring him on in. So we did, and we got through it, and she got through the day. The next slide shows a rather tranquil and kind of placid setting. This is our public service area. There's a gentleman seated at one of our computers. What you don't know, though, is that we had scrambled for about 2 hours before this gentleman was able to sit down because we did not have the latest version of JAWS installed on our public computers. So we had to call our network administrators. This poor gentleman lost about 2 hours of his work time because we weren't able to provide what he needed that morning. So rest assured, we try to stay up to date now, but things can catch you unaware. So please make sure your library has the necessary technology and equipment to provide special needs access to computers and the physical environment of the library. Sometimes when we rearrange the furniture, we forget to put things back in place. And there's no room for wheelchairs or for anybody else that needs to use things. The next slide. Okay. There we go. We see two people seated here. One person is blind and one person is not. The person who is not was one of our interns, and she came to us and she was scared to death. I told her not to worry about anything. She was from City Charter High School, and I told her that, you know, even if you delete a file that you're working on for editing, we have a backup so we can start over. That made her feel better. But one day I said, "You know, how about you partner monitor with Christine here in the photo and see how that goes? Because Christine needs a little bit of help interpreting the text." She's like, "No, I can't do that. I'm scared to death. You know, it's just, I've never worked with somebody who's blind before." And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, give it a try. And Christine will walk you through everything. And Christine just made her feel so good about working with someone with a disability that they ended up being partners throughout the entire book. And it was just really nice to see that kind of relationship form there. Sort of baptism by fire, but it's something you have to allow for. The next slide shows a gentleman in a wheelchair right in our booth. And we had set up beforehand to have a ramp so that someone who was disabled could get into our booth. But in like 6 years of using one of our booths, I don't think we ever had a wheelchair in there. So when he came in from the Obama Academy kind of spontaneously. He was scheduled, but we weren't prepared. We didn't know he needed a wheelchair. So we really had to kind of look at our rules of what we define as equal access. And to know that we had that ahead of time was good, but the day of, we were scrambling once again to make sure that he could fit in the booth and adjusting the microphone and everything. So if you want to say, you're equal access, make sure you can live up to that, because sometimes you can't just because of the physical layout or whatever. Also, equal access means access to all of our volunteer roles. Narration, seems to be at the pinnacle of what people can do for us in volunteership. But, this gentleman ended up being one of our best narrators ever. But you see the obvious and you think like, well, is he going to be any good? And he was. But it doesn't matter if he's any good or not. It's more important, I think, to provide equal access and to allow them the chance to do that. And the next slide shows Zach. He's proudly holding his volunteer certificate at 1,000 hours, I believe. This is really talking about our position descriptions. So we do have active position descriptions for all of our volunteer roles, monitor, editor, narrator, etc. But sometimes it's difficult to work in the language of the disability. Those are usually written for able people who, don't have any special needs. And we had to reformat all of our position descriptions to include that type of language. So again, it could be equal access and provide equal opportunity. And Zach helped us with that, and we're really thankful for him. And lastly, we have a slide of Russ, who is one of our staff members. He's not a volunteer, but this slide just reads, are you willing to take a chance in permitting a volunteer to try something that might seem impossible or has a high probability of failure? Russ has a screen in front of him. He's using Studio Recorder to edit. Most of our editing is done with Audition, but Audition has no onboard accessibility features. So we set Russ up with Studio Recorder, and he seemed to be doing fine, but previously we had an editor who didn't do so well with Studio Recorder. Studio Recorder has audio enhancement, so people can edit with audio prompts. And that was in the back of my mind, but Russ and a few subsequent editors who are blind have used Studio Recorder, as well as anybody who's sighted can use Audition. And so that was my prejudice and my feelings like, oh, somebody who is unsighted is not going to do a good job editing because it requires so much visual. But I'm glad to say I was very wrong. And that looks like the end of the slide, and I thank you all.
And we have a few minutes left for questions. Comments? Yes.
Carol mentioned quite a few resources during your panel presentation. Jill mentioned a handbook at NYPL. Scott mentioned some tip sheets. Is there a way any of us folks could access things like that from you guys? So we could take them home and utilize them?
Terry, I'm checking with you. I think that the PowerPoints are going to be made available on the wiki if possible, and we could put together a resources page as well, probably, if you guys want.
Yeah, we can email the information to you and put it up on the wiki.
We can put it on the wiki, absolutely.
Have you put the forgot it now. Oh, did you put the job descriptions for volunteers and all the recording, et cetera, up on the wiki?
No, we didn't. We're still refining it, but that's a good idea, Carrie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have somebody who tuned in remotely with a comment. This is from Lori Shedlock from Bayside Area and Special Services Library in Virginia Beach. She says, I was able to watch live from Virginia Beach before running into another meeting. I'm in the process of developing disability awareness training for our entire public library staff to be mandatory in the future quarterly new staff orientation. I found the panel members' experiences invaluable.
Thanks.